Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest OIES podcast. This one is being brought to you from the GAS programme. My name is James Henderson. I'm head of GAS research at OIES, and I'm here today with my colleague Mustafa Uki, who is a senior research fellow, and he's just written a paper called The Prospects for a New African Gas Renaissance and Energy Transition Implications, which has come out on the OIS website today, which is the 5th of September. And we are recording at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, just to timestamp this podcast. So Mustafa, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be here.
Okay, well, look, let's get straight into the meat of it. What prompted you to talk about an African gas renaissance? Was there a specific catalyst for you writing this paper?
If you look at the history of the energy business in Africa, during the last decade, several key gas discoveries were made in Africa, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, namely in Mozambique, Tanzania, Mauritania, and Senegal. There was one major discovery in North Africa, that was the Zohr gas field in Egypt, but mainly it was in sub-Saharan Africa. So these gas discoveries provided some kind of hope for African countries to have the opportunity to develop and monetize their indigenous natural gas resources. But this gas hope somehow got dashed by new international decarbonization measures to decarbonize economies and also calls to stop or reduce significantly oil and gas investment. We had COVID after that, and a few years after, there was the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, and that had an impact on, an obvious impact on international gas markets. And suddenly, there was this unexpected European interest in African gas to replace or replace part of the Russian gas supply that were lost. So African existing and potential gas suppliers welcomed this, I have to say, cautiously, and try to leverage it to try to focus on achieving this kind of gas renaissance, which didn't happen a decade earlier. So that's why now we're looking at, is there a new gas renaissance or a new golden age of gas that could not materialize earlier?
Okay, well, that's a good start. Now, so let's give a bit of background then. What's Africa's present natural gas situation? Who are the key players at the moment? What are the reserve levels? What's production? What's consumption? I guess, what are exports? And equally interestingly, are there new players emerging on the horizon with new discoveries?
If you look at the gas situation in Africa, although it's a very diverse continent with 54 countries, with different endowment in terms of natural gas, in terms of economic system, politics, etc., population, at the moment, only a few countries have proven gas reserves and produce and consume natural gas. To give you numbers, starting with proved gas reserves, at the moment, we have five countries, namely Algeria, Egypt, Nigeria, Algeria, Libya, and Mozambique, who account for over 90% of the whole continent's proved natural gas reserves. So it shows it's highly concentrated in a few countries. And of course, when you look at gas production and consumption side, we have the same kind of concentration. Four countries, Algeria, Egypt, Libya, and Nigeria, account for over 80% of what is consumed in terms of gas in Africa. Now, in terms of export, I think that's a key point, because right now, Africa, I would say over 90% of Africa's gas export are going to Europe. The reason why it's important, it's in the light of decarbonization measures that will affect Europe's gas demand in the future. In terms of new producers, at the moment, you have something like 15 countries produce or consuming natural gas. But in terms of new producers, you will see new producers in a part of West Africa, in Mauritania and in Senegal. Mozambique has been exporting, producing and exporting gas in much smaller volume. But with the discoveries in northern Mozambique and the Rovuma Basin, that will increase. So to sum it up, it's at the moment a highly concentrated a number of countries that have reserves and, of course, produce and consume gas.
And just before we leave this sort of topic on consumption, which sectors are consuming natural gas? Is it mainly power, or is there industry and residential as well?
It is mainly power. Over 50% of the gas consumed in Africa is by the power sector. Industries, different sectors, and industrial sectors are also the second largest user of natural gas. But again, if you look at the African continent, it's a very vast continent with over 50 countries. Only a few countries are using, for example, gas in industries and economy. I would say maybe four countries like Algeria, Egypt, Nigeria, and South Africa. So it's, again, highly concentrated. But what we will see, according to the plans and things which are being developed, there will be new players. And these new players will be or are in West Africa, in the Mauritania, Senegal, Gambia, Guinea Basin, and in the Rovuma Basin, basically in southern and eastern Africa.
So I guess if we're going to see a renaissance, we're going to have to see these new players come to the fore. I mean, the incumbents staying in place, but there being new developments. So talk us through a bit about how those projects, if you like, are going to get funded. What's the history of funding of African gas projects, and what's the outlook to get these new players going so this renaissance can start to happen?
To start with, financing energy projects in Africa has always been complicated. And the reason for that are well-known factors: inadequate legal, regulatory, and fiscal framework, the fact that domestic market is for domestic monetization, domestic market heavily subsidized in a lot of countries, domestic power utilities also in a very fragile situation, the question of currency convertibility, just to name a few of them. So financing project in Africa has always been difficult. It is going to get a bit more complicated. If you look at the history of funding of energy project in Africa, up to the very recent project like the Mozambique LNG or the different LNG or Coral Sul LNG, it has been mainly, I would say exclusively, funded by export credit agencies and multilateral development agencies. So the ECA and the MDBA are playing, or have played, a major role. You could see also International Commercial Bank named or listed in this project funding. But the specificity of this thing is the fact that this commercial bank would not go into the financing or co-financing unless there is a cover from the ECA or the relevant multilateral development agencies. Now, what they said with the decarbonization, international decarbonization measures, things are going to be more difficult for the ECAs and also the multilateral development agency to finance this project. And in fact, you know, in 2017, the World Bank announced that it will stop financing fossil fuel project, except for some gas to power project that could not be financed and present, you know, some kind of a specific thing. And as long as they would be compliant with some decarbonization conditions, the EIB, which was also a major player in the financing of energy projects, especially in sub-Saharan, actually in the whole of Africa, have in 2009 decided that they will stop financing fossil fuel projects, including natural gas. So the situation is a bit complicated in Africa by these decarbonization measures. So we could be in a situation where the involvement of ECA and MDAs is going to be reduced or could be stopped in some case. And that is because of the decarbonization measures, or so more precisely ESG principles, where financing of projects is not only challenged by NGOs, but also by shareholders of companies, by ECAs, the board of ECAs, the board of companies. So it has widened, and that could really reduce the involvement of ECA and MDAs.
So if we're looking at financing then, and clearly one of the questions you've kind of alluded to already is around monetization. I mean, the projects will need to demonstrate to any financial institutions that they can make a return and obviously pay off any debt and make a profit. So what are the monetization options? I mean, most people's perception is that this is all about exports with a little bit reserved for domestic markets. But in this renaissance that you paint, are we seeing a lot of domestic market action as well, or is it mainly around export projects?
Before we talk about the export versus domestic option, there is something which is central in the paper and central to this issue of funding gas or energy project in Africa. It's the fact that now is the time for African energy policymakers or stakeholders to look at de-risking project. What do I mean by that? It means all these internal barriers that I've just mentioned earlier have to be addressed. They are all complicated issues. They are difficult, but they cannot be ignored. Something has to be done. International decarbonization, I think this is a decision that has been taken. It will go ahead, especially in Europe. Now, Africa has to look at what it can do on its side to de-risk project, whether it's an export project or a domestic project. Now, of course, an export project has more attraction because of the fact that it's generating external revenues and it's shielded from the risks that you will have in the domestic market, because the domestic market are more fragile financially. But to me, it's the same thing. If they're going to de-risk project, it's for both export and domestic market. And the additional dimension to that is the decarbonization. If they think that decarbonization could serve only gas export project, it's wrong, because they will need also financing to fund domestic project. So going back to your question, export versus domestic, there has been in the past a lot of debate about the fact that priority should be given to the domestic market, having everything. But the reality is such that it's very difficult to finance a domestic gas project. I say energy because it's closely linked to electricity as well. And electricity utilities in Africa, a lot of them are in a very fragile situation, unless it's kind of secured or guaranteed by some kind of financial mechanism. But going back to the export versus domestic, when you look at the new players, the likes of Mozambique, the likes of, you can even include Tanzania or Mauritania or Senegal, the domestic market is very small. It's a nascent market. So the choice is not really between domestic and export. The situation is such that the gas export option or monetization is the driver. If you don't have that, you won't have the development of this gas resources. And in each of this gas export project, there is an allocation for the domestic market. And you will see those allocations are very small because of the size of the market. And that's not a challenge for the domestic market.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, if there's really going to be a gas renaissance in Africa, it needs to be domestic as well as export, doesn't it, for it really to sort of be seen as an African renaissance. What are the focuses of future demand growth in Africa? I mean, which regions, which sectors could we actually see demand growth?
To me, export and domestic markets are closely linked, because if you don't have the export, it's very, in some countries, it's very difficult to develop the domestic market. In terms of what countries, if you look at gas demand growth rates, take, for example, North Africa. North Africa, the economy of countries like Algeria and Egypt and Libya, to a certain extent, have a high degree of gasification, meaning that if you take the power sector, natural gas is the dominant generation fuel. Over 90% in Algeria, over 70% in Egypt. And you add to that the fact that with time, domestic gas price subsidies in those countries will have to be reduced or more targeted. It has started already in countries like Egypt, will gradually take place in other countries as well, because the financial burden is becoming very difficult, especially if gas export revenue are going to be reduced. But in terms of growth, North Africa is not going to grow the same way it grew over the last two or three decades. What are we going to see? We're going to see a lot of gas demand growth in sub-Saharan Africa, especially in new markets. Why? Because these are nascent market and they're keen to develop the gas. So to develop and monetize the gas, so you'll have more gas being developed. So if you look in terms of growth rate, it will be in sub-Saharan Africa.
Okay. I mean, and in terms of that growth, and energy transition kind of implications. What are the transition implications in both the domestic transition kind of strategies, but also the global transition strategies? What are the implications for the energy transition of this kind of new gas developments in Africa?
That's another key part of the paper and the whole question of gas development in Africa. Again, I don't want to separate export from domestic market. If we focus, and that's the focus of the paper actually, we're focusing on existing and potential new gas producers and possibly exporter in Africa. And that gives you maybe a dozen of countries or less than a dozen of countries. For those countries, it is important that don't ignore or underestimate the impact of decarbonization measures. What do I mean? When you're producing gas, some of the key issues are associated gas flaring, methane emission, and at some stage, you know, looking at what to do with unabated gas, meaning, you know, eventually at some stage, developing CCS or CCUS. So these are the issues specifically related to the gas produced, existing and new gas producing in Africa. So these are things they cannot ignore. The reason why I have put the emphasis on that is the fact that there's a kind of highly polarized debate between those who are against fossil fuels, and gas included, and African countries who, in a way, are a bit enthusiastic about developing their natural gas resources, are about enthusiastic about what is happening, this new interest in African natural gas. But my view is you shouldn't have any illusion about this short-term interest in African gas and this short-term European interest in African gas. In the long term, these decarbonization issues will have to be addressed. What does it mean? It means, you know, looking at the associated gas flaring. We have seen some effort being made in terms of reducing flaring, and we see more things. But the reality is flaring is still happening. Methane emission is another thing that they have a look at. And there is this question of unabated gas. I know CCS or CCUS projects are costly projects. There have been, and people could be saying, oh, that's not for Africa. It's impossible to do. But again, what I'm focusing on and what I would like to stress is the fact that ignoring decarbonization measures, oh, may I say, what I mean by decarbonization measures, I don't mean only the inclusion of few megawatts in the project side, a few megawatts of solar or wind in the project side, or getting into nature-based schemes. I mean, reducing carbon footprint of future, existing and future gas operation. So to come back to my point, if these things are ignored, it will be an existential threat for African gas producers, because a lot of these producers, you know, especially in North Africa, rely heavily on gas export. So what happens if you suddenly your gas export is no longer persona grata in markets like Europe, which is at the moment a central market for African gas?
Let's draw this to a conclusion. I mean, I think fair to say, I think a few people at our institute and in the broader world are pretty cynical about the future of gas in Africa. They see all the problems you've elucidated, and they're not sure there's really a commitment to implementing the policies that you've addressed. So how confident are you about that? What do you really think the likelihood is of, one, countries and companies committing to the kind of lower carbon intensity footprint, and two, what do you think the likelihood is of a golden age of gas? Wrap it up for us and tell us your level of confidence.
I've heard this thing several times, and even among, you know, Africans, something. I mean, my response is it would be unwise and unrealistic to ignore these measures. Why? Because if they really aspire to develop their indigenous natural gas resources and get funding for it, they will have to pay attention to decarbonization measures. And I would say, maybe this is a bit more controversial, I would say it's even more important in Africa than maybe in some OECD countries with very ambitious decarbonization measures. Because I give you an example. When a country relies on over 95% of its revenue on hydrocarbon exports, and you don't have a diversified economy, that is going to be tough. I mean, to me, it's doable. I mean, this natural gas renaissance, I don't I'm not naive. It's going to be very challenging, and it will take a while to take place. But it's achievable, and it's achievable as long as it's within a fair energy transition. What do I mean? The role of gas will remain predominant in the energy transition in those countries. But also, you need a lot of effort internally to de-risk project and to look seriously at the question of decarbonization. We're talking about the long term. We should not be, I mean, at the moment, what I see in Africa is the fact that there is a lot of interest in gas at the moment, it's short term, especially from Europe, and they ignore things. But if you look at all the new projects in Africa, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, they're supposed to come on stream after 2030 or after 2030. So you need to be prepared for this.
Well, on that relatively positive note, I think we will bring this podcast to a conclusion. Thanks very much, Mustafa. Your paper, Prospects for a New African Gas Renaissance and the Energy Transition Implications, is out on our website today, 5th of September, as I said. Thanks for outlining the key arguments and answering my questions. I hope that's been interesting and enjoyable for all our listeners. The next Gas Programme podcast will be around in a couple of weeks, so look out for that. But in the meantime, thanks very much for listening. Take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.